This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 713, brought to you by the Netflix Behind the Scenes podcast. New episodes of Behind the Scenes are out now with new episodes weekly. And iFanboy listeners just like you. Fanboy Pick of the Week, episode 713. I'm Connor Gilpatrick. This is Josh Flanagan.
Well, hello there.
And we're back.
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking, I was like, oh, I'm getting over this cold. It'll be rough. And then you show up and you're like, hold my NyQuil.
Yeah. We got sick over the break. That's what you want on your vacation. That's fine. So we're back. We took our yearly winter break. And now we're entering our 15th year of the show, Josh.
Why did you tell us? What the heck?
And not only that, but it's our 20th year of iFanboy in general. So it's a generation of doing iFanboy.
It's my entire adult life. If it wasn't for this, it would just be endless war.
So that's fun. It is fun.
It is.
There's nothing I can say with this voice that sounds enthusiastic, but I am enthusiastic. I sound like I want to die, which I do. So we are iFanboy. What are we? If you're new to the show, maybe you decide to check out podcasts in the new year. We are iFanboy, and every week we read a bunch of comics, and one of us, they pick their favorite book, and they call that the pick of the week. We talk about that book, other books from the week. We have our patron pick and listener mail. It's a fun time. I'm going to try not to cough and or hack up anything into the microphone. It'll be great for everyone.
And here's you have a button.
I do.
Just hit that button.
I'm going to try. And if you hit the... sometimes it happens out of nowhere. Here's your spoiler warning. This is a review show. There'll be spoilers. So exercise your caution brain. It's just whatever that is. I don't know.
Oh, man. Hold on. I'm going to write that down with my patron power.
You know what the thing is? Like, usually we take these breaks. I always come back like super enthusiastic and excited to do the show because I miss talking to you about comics. And then I just want to go to sleep. I'm apologize to all the listeners out there. I'm happy to be back and doing the show and reading comics. But, man, I am not doing well. Josh, you're the pick, thankfully.
When do you not just want to go to sleep, though? Even if it's a good day, you don't be nice.
You know, it would be great to take a nap. I finally understand my grandfather.
Oh, 100%. Pick of the week this week is Amazing Spider-Man number 37.
Wait, we should also mention. Whew,
yeah.
Boy, I don't envy you, man. There was a week, one of the weeks we were off, I had like 40 books on my pull list. It was crazy. I was really glad we didn't have the show that week.
Mine are still there.
But yeah, most of them are. But but man, this week, I think I had like 12 books and I finished reading and I texted you. And I was like, good luck, buddy. Because there was a lot of fine reads, but man, this was a weird week.
Yeah, and like I was definitely doing the thing which I don't get to do very much anymore. Where I was searching like, well, what else can I read? which is, you know, sort of good and sort of bad. There wasn't really a ton to choose from, so I had to sort of come at this with a different set of criteria. Sure. to decide what the pick of the week was. And I decided on Amazing Spider-Man 37. There were other things. I think we're going to talk about all the other ones that were close. And the reasoning is I've been enjoying Nick Spencer's run, primarily with Ryan Otley, but also with other fine and capable artists.
People like that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a real return to Spider-Man. It's been, you know, sort of like, wow, you know, I don't know if it took Nick Spencer this long to be able to be the guy who could do this, but right now he's totally the guy to do this. And there had been the crossover bit, I guess, with Spider-Man 2099 and some. I don't know. I stopped reading it. I basically completely lost track of the book, and I said, I'm just going to read it when it comes back.
This book has been terrific when it hasn't been in a crossover. Like, it was before 2099, it was like one of my top books, and I just didn't care about that crossover at all. But I mean, also, there was a couple of new Absolute Carnage crossovers. Like, I feel like there was like six issues in a row that were crossovers. But now that we're off that, the thing about this week is like you could have picked anything, and I've been like, okay, sure. And this was one actually really enjoyable. You said Otley's back, and it's beautiful when he does it. And there was some laughs, and they're setting up some interesting things. And
yeah, it was fun. And that was really key. I think I was reading through it, and I just found myself really appreciating Ryan Otley. Which I always have, but you know, it's one of those things too. Like, wow, he was also pretty much made to draw this book, and you got to see all the things that he did in Invincible that made that work really well. But you know, sort of, he couldn't fall back on the tropes that he'd been able to do in that book. You know, where his thing is, you know, he could do really violent, gory, but also kind of funny cartooning of, you know, people who'd been beaten up or are getting beaten up real bad. And this, he can't do that. He's got to kind of go with a different thing. And on the first sort of page here is a double page spread. And then right after that, you have a scene of J. Jonah Jameson on the mic at his radio show. The two sort of wacky morning DJs come in, Chet and Chet.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is just the best page. It was like from art, like the way that they were drawn and the facial expressions on Chet and Chet, the fact that one of them is dressed, you know, he's sort of a bigger dude in an oversized jersey and a backwards hat. Then the other guy's got the sort of serial killer who works at a convenience store haircut and goatee. I mean, every single thing about it was perfect. Even, I might go so far to say, is the RE20 microphone that he drew there.
No,
a little small, but that's the correct microphone. Just everything about that, I just thought, wow, that's really good. And I was just impressed by the not superhero-y stuff. And then also, it was just really funny, Chet and Chet time. And he walks out angry, and he literally, Jonas literally says, "Rassum frassum," which is, I don't know if you people know what that is anymore, but it's the grumbly cartoon sound that old grumpy men make. And so they really sort of reset the table on... I just got back on. I hadn't read the last however many issues. I just said I'm going to come back, and then I looked and I was like, oh, this one looks safe. So it sets up the new paradigm for J. Jonah Jameson here, where he's going to get, I don't know if he's getting bought out or some invest, but he's going to make a lot of money to do some stuff.
He's joining Nora Winters, who was the character that was introduced a while back, who was a journalist, in some new digital. Adventure in journalism, and that's the only problem with all these books is that half of the characters are journalists, and no one really knows how to deal with that in the books because it's an important part of their characters. And mm-hmm. so we have him, I guess, leaving the radio station because he left the Daily Bugle a while ago,
right?
To join Nora Winters in some highly paid journalistic venture. Which is fine.
I want him to be on the radio show forever. I think that's fantastic. I think that's exactly the correct update to what
he did in the
60s.
Yeah.
Then you have a reset too of Peter Parker, and he is now in possession of the clairvoyance, the clairvoyant, which will help him predict the future. I don't know. I don't really care.
Yeah, that was an element from the 2099 crossover.
Yep, I figured.
There are allusions to Civil War II, in which they had that character who could predict the future and all the trouble that brought. So he's a little twitchy about it.
Yeah, but we also have him sort of, I mean, basically just swinging around and in his own head as he does stuff. And I think that I was just impressed by the, you know, this is Spider-Man. This is the current version of Spider-Man and all of his sort of hand-wringing and inner monologue is that same old stuff that he's been dealing with. You know, I want to do the best. I need to be there for that, but I got to take care of myself. And I have this wife, and they have a nice date. You know, like
the whole thing is trying to get home in time for the video chat because she's off making a movie in the Amazing Mary Jane book.
And he's always late, and that's the thing. And she's surprised that he's on time. And you know, it's fun to have him balance those things and kind of like, you know, he didn't really screw up anything this time. He got to have a nice night.
He fell asleep on the call.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure he missed out on some sort of sexy time, but that's all right.
Who and then we're back
to this, I assume
this guy with the worm.
Good question. So the
Yes.
The bad guy with the worm who we've been seeing for a while, I believe he was, I can't remember if he was revealed or not. I think he might be Harry Osborn. There was some allusion to who he was. But the main thing here is through some awesome comic book magic, which I just love when this stuff happens, he has resurrected Sin Eater.
Is that who that is?
Yeah, from the classic Spider-Man story, The Death of Jean DeWolf, which was the 80s, I think.
And so Sin Eater's like a late 80s. Sort of like Scourge?
He's like a cop. He's a cop turned vigilante.
Punisher.
Yeah.
And
that was the Death of Jean DeWolf was one of those classic Spider-Man stories from the late 80s that I read as a kid. He was the bad guy in that one, ended up dying at the end. So I don't think he's been back since then. But that was cool to see. I was like, whoa, Sin Eater. Yeah. I haven't thought about you in 25 years.
No, so it's just, you know, coming back in the new year, how about just a good issue of Spider-Man?
Yeah, it was very good.
And, the whole time I'm just looking at the Ryan Otley art going, this is great. This is all great. And I'm paying attention to the characterizations and where we are. And, you know, that you got one of those, these are almost becoming cliche now, but the 9-panel grid where all the superheroes say a different thing and you sort of get a little gag and a little bit of their character, you know, bunch of nice things. It's not,
you also get Otley drawing a bunch of them, which is nice.
Yeah. So, you know, it's not dinner at a fancy restaurant, but it's the old neighborhood place. You know, I'm going to go out and I'm gonna have a little nice meal with some fries and let's move on with it. And that's what I got out of this. Great colors by Nathan Fairbairn, who's I love every time I see his name on a comic book. I'm very happy about it.
Cliff Rathburn is Otley's inker in a world where there are hardly any inkers left.
I'm really appreciative of books that have inkers very much lately. I notice it.
Well, there's only about five or six left, which is funny because I remember like 10 years ago, there was some controversy because Sean Murphy claimed there would be no more inkers, and everyone was like, whoa, and he was right. There's no more inkers. Let's move over to Vertigo.
Let us.
I'm reading a surprising number of horror-themed books, including The Dollhouse Family, number 2-3 year. I read 2 and 3. Which I believe was...
Pick of the week?
That was a pick of the week.
First one.
Yeah. And I'm enjoying it. I'm not super loving it. Uh-huh. I like the stuff that's... So as we talked about, because it was pick of the week, it's two stories, or it's multiple stories, but there's two main ones. Yeah. One is in the present day with this woman. Although now we've jumped further into the future where she's now an adult with the dollhouse. And then we go back. And then we also go back in the past to see the generation of the dollhouse and the curse and everything.
There's two timelines that we're basically going.
But then there's also these demons. And whenever I go to the demons, I'm like, I don't really care. But when we go to like the horror of what this woman's dealing with is compelling. The story of this guy who had been cursed by going in the cave, and then the dollhouse shows up on his front door and his wife dies in childbirth. And that's all really compelling. It's just like when he goes in the cave and there's like a giant demon and there's a woman with, I was like, hey, whatever. But I the art's terrific, and the ending was kind of shocking. So I like this issue a lot.
I think I I read two at some point as I was sort of slowly going through my backlog, and I really enjoyed it. Like, if you know, first I almost had the same feeling. I was like, I know I made this pick of the week, but this doesn't look like something I want to read. And then I sort of was like, all right, no, it's good. I like it. And I, part of it is that it's very, I mean, Mike Carey's, I don't know if people even know him anymore, but he's an old comics pro. Somebody actually asked me over Twitter, everything over the break was, you know, like, hey, should I read Lucifer? And I was like, hell yes, my God. Yeah. Yeah, and the cover might say M.R. Carey, but that's Mike Carey as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. You can't change your name to me, Butch Geis. I just think that the storytelling has been really elegant and efficient. If you think about how much space was covered in this issue from a one-night stand. What is
going on here?
Yeah, I mean, even if it was just the one story that covered a lot of space and did it in a way that didn't feel sort of light. And I like how we're slowly getting – we're seeing the connections between the two stories is that the name of the boy who was born in the 1800s in Ireland, I think it's Ireland. You know, is the same name as the boy in the dollhouse. And you see that, you know, the girl's horrible time.
The rooms are all like named after him. Like,
yeah,
it's like his study. And when she has the little doll, what does she say?
It's a weird name, and that's why I can't remember.
Cordwainer will be sad if he can't go back. So that's him. That's Cordwainer. He must be the owner of the dog.
Or
the patriarch.
But they had named, but she also said, I want to name him after my father.
Yeah, it's all.
Her grandfather.
It's all, yeah. I mean, Cordwainer is the kid who's born, even though the mother was barren.
Uh-huh.
And then in the present day, the woman has a baby, even though she takes the plan B. And so,
oh yeah, and put that together.
So they can't.
There's a lot of elegant intertwining going on. A lot of really nice storytelling. I think that it takes a lot of work for an artist to keep up with this sort of intricate plotting in a comic book. And I think the team of Peter Gross and Vince Locke are doing a really good job with it. It's not my favorite genre, but it's done really well and it's compelling in that way. So I'm really glad that I started reading it. I'm keeping it up.
And the art's really good. It's Vince Locke over Peter Gross's layouts, and the older stuff has this kind of Victorian look to it.
Uh-huh.
And then the new stuff is very Vertigo-y. I had the same feeling you did. I was like, oh, I got to read two of these, and then I was like, oh, I like that.
Right. Again, it's exactly that. I hate the design, like, of the cover, like the aesthetic that they're going with on all these. But I was like, it's good. What do you want? You know, Vertigo is really doing great stuff right now.
It's true. They are. It's a Vertigo sense.
Yes, totally. I wasn't going to read Star Number One. And then when I was looking for something to do, and then we saw it was moving up in the patron pick arena, and I was like, oh, I'll just get to it anyway. And I really actually quite enjoyed it. I didn't read anything that came from – that preceded it, whatever the Captain Marvel story is that created this character where she has a reality gem embedded in her. I guess it's one of the Infinity Stones or some offshoot of it.
No, she has the reality
stone. The actual reality stone, right. Okay, so she's got a bunch of power, but she lives in Queens and she doesn't have any money or a job and everyone hates her. And Captain Marvel tried to kill her, but she didn't die. And that's where our story begins. I actually didn't know, based on the cover, I was like, oh, it's another superhero. But apparently right now she is not a superhero, although it seems like she's trending in that way.
It's funny because I did read those books, but I have no memory of them. I was like, wait, what happened? Oh, right, kind of remember her. She was a character. I have a weird relationship with that Captain Marvel book. But this was a really interesting example of a book I thought was really well done, and I don't know that I want to read any more of it.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, I thought this was a really good issue. It was strong.
Yes, it was.
It was Kelly Thompson's writer, Javier Pina, did most of the art. Felipe Andrade did the flashback. And it looked really good.
And yeah, it did.
I thought the character work was great. She goes to Jessica Jones for help, which doesn't go well. And Scarlet Witch shows up. I don't know that Scarlet Witch showing up and cursing really made sense, but I'm just not used to it. But I read it. I was like, oh, that was really fun. Do I need to read more? I don't know.
Well, a couple of things. I think Kelly Thompson for me has been hit or miss. I've liked some of the things she's done quite a lot, and I've really not liked some of the things that she's done. But when Jessica Jones showed up, I was reminded that she wrote that, I think it was maybe a digital-only series, The Purple Man. Jessica Jones story, which was great, really, really good. And so I saw like this was a character she was going to go back to, and I found that to be compelling.
Well, that was the best scene because Star has the reality stone, reality gem in her, And that allows her to sort of shape reality to her whim. And if you think about it, it's very similar power to the Purple Man. So when she goes to Jessica Jones and tries to force Jessica Jones to do what she wants, basically to help her, that really pisses off Jessica Jones. And until she mentioned why, I was like, wow, that's great. It's a great bit of subtle storytelling.
And I thought so. I noticed it right away. I thought that's
really cool. Of course they had to mention. And it was interesting because she's not the Purple Man. So she says basically, you really want to help me more than anything. And so she thinks she's got her, but then Jessica's like, I do really want to help you now, but also I have room for my heart for other things like punching you. So it doesn't like take over her mind. It puts this thing into her head that she needs to do, but she also needs to do other things. And that was an interesting twist on the mind control thing.
Yep.
I might be talking myself into reading the second issue right here because I did really like this. So
it's good.
It was shockingly good. And Captain Marvel has been really, which Kelly Thompson also writes, has been a roller coaster. Like there's been some really fun arcs and some really boring arcs. So I'm still reading it, and I just this might be a better issue than what we've read in Captain Marvel.
Well, what put me over the top to this too is that I saw the two artists involved, and I thought those are two great artists. And even as I'm flipping through it now, like it's a good looking book.
Yeah, it is.
It's really nice. So
the one Felipe Andrade, I can't talk about it, Andrade page. It's terrific.
Yeah.
Really terrific.
Yep. Here's my question. I do have one question. There's a page where a girl in black hair walks in with a hoodie and says, I found an Infinity Stone. Then somebody says, but no donuts. Who are those people?
What number are we?
They're in the East Village. We're at page 17 under Digital Reader. Okay. They're playing.
I don't know who that is. That's okay. That's probably the I don't know. I don't know.
Well, the girl in the back who is finishing her Chinese food is about to go out to a club. So there's that.
It's Saturday night.
Sure. In the East Village, it's always Saturday night.
I don't know. I assume that'll be revealed as something else.
Okay.
I don't know what that is.
It's fine. Didn't is literally one page.
I literally forgot that happened. Like I remember reading it going, oh, interesting. And then it moved on to Jessica Jones and I immediately forgot everything about that.
That makes sense. Over in the world of Dynamite, I don't know if this is officially the 12th issue of Red Sonja, but I saw chapter 12 and I go, I bet this is it. And it definitely ended the story that we've been reading for 12 issues. And I thought when I started this, I thought, you know what, for sure, this is almost definitely going to be the pick of the week. I have loved this series. I would go so far as to say it's definitely been one of my favorite series over the last year over its publishing, which has been very regular and not every 2 weeks. So every month, really, obviously.
Year of Red Sonja.
Yeah.
What are the odds?
That's new. Really consistent art, even though they juggled a couple of teams between Mirko Kolek and Bob Q, or whatever it is his name is now.
Robert Quinn.
Yeah, there you go. Y'all know me. You know how I draw a comic. And I liked it, and I enjoyed it, and I think everything that I liked about the series was present here. I did feel like it wrapped up very quickly as we got near the end.
I was trying to think about it because, like, I don't know how else you wrap up a. Sometimes I'll watch a movie and an action movie, or whatever, and the good guy, the bad guy, finally meet, and then the fight ends. And you're like, well, that was quick, but you're like, well, how else is it supposed to,
Sure,
they punch each other for an hour and a half. So it's like, there's an attack, the forces finally turn on the Emperor, it is what it is. I thought the way that the Emperor gets it was funny.
Yes.
Or not just funny, but also like appropriate because
I do like that the one guy, I like that it was like completely spontaneous. The one guy just stabs him. He goes, what are you doing? He's like, I don't know. I just panicked.
Well, because he's like, it's funny because like you two guards, basically his last two guards alive, form a defensive perimeter, which made me laugh because what are they going to do against the whole army? And so then the other guard just stabs him because he and that's what history has shown. Like, when the tyrant reaches the end of his rope, his men will turn on him because what else are they going to do?
I mean, the whole thing was,
and that was the whole point of the issue was be if you're good to your pawns, because it's a whole chess metaphor. If you're good to your pawns, then if you look after your pawns, then you'll be fine.
Yeah, the whole thing was a treatise on leadership. And and war and empires, and it was a lot of very heady philosophical stuff going through here. And I think I don't think a big plot twist or something at the end or some sort of surprise really would have served it. It was, you know, we've gone through the match and here's the end of the game and this is how it ends. And I'm fine with that. And I enjoyed it. I will look back very fondly. I can't imagine they're going to keep going, or at least, you know, like this will be the thing it is. But I will look back very fondly on this story for a long time. But it wasn't like a bang pow ending where you're like, wow, man, that really wrapped it up. It just – you're right. It ended like it was supposed to. And he has a big Chili Pepper hat. And it's important to note that he has a big Chili Pepper hat, which I don't think was around for a little while. And I saw it and I remembered. I was like, right, there's that. Yeah. I mean, who'd have thought, you know?
I mean, this is a very Mark Russell book. It's also a very not Mark Russell book. We've talked about that before. It's not quite as wacky, although it is, but not to the level of his other books. But it also brings a level of thoughtfulness that you don't normally see in these kind of books.
Oh, it's a level of thoughtfulness that we haven't seen since Snagglepuss.
That's true.
Really impressive and entertaining at the same time.
Like that's great art, which is normally the problem with these books.
Yes, absolutely.
The art is usually not up to par with the writing, but here it is.
100%.
I'm glad obviously we read this, but I'm glad to have taken this journey because it was a fun one.
Yeah, wow. And totally unexpected. Who'd have thought, you know?
So did you read Batman 86?
No. No, I did not.
You didn't end up reading it.
You know what? I the names involved are not names that excite me in any way. Not like, oh, this is crap. I asked you, I was like, well, is it what I would expect from that? And you're probably like, yeah, that's pretty much what it was.
No, you asked me, should I read it? And I said, sure.
Now that's not like, oh, yes, that's, well, you know, sure. Because I know you're going
to
read it.
Listen to how my voice sounds. Sure was about as good as you get from any question from me right now.
Sure.
so this is the first issue of the new direction for Batman.
Sell it to me then. Go for it.
This is DC's top book. And so now we have James Tinney in the fourth and Tony S. Daniel with inker Danny Mickey. So you missed out on an inker this week.
Good inker. He's a good inker. He's for sure.
And the fact of the matter is James Tinney in the fourth is a solid journeyman writer who will occasionally do something I really like, but for the most part does okay work, and he usually overwrites it. He's from Scott Snyder's school, like literally. Tony S. Daniel is a competent artist whose style I don't love.
I mean, all of the things you said just made me think. You know, the say what you will about Tom King's run, and we will discuss it at some point. After I finish it and have a chance to think about it, you know, like even if I didn't love all of it, I liked the thought behind it. And I feel like the way that all of this went down, DC was like, all right, we need to make a change back to our house style. And I don't care about it. Like I knew it. And tell me if I'm wrong, if that's what it was, if that's what it felt like.
Well, from an art side, sure, for certain. Daniel's definitely within the Jim Lee house style. Mm-hmm. I actually really like this. This is some of the better work Tinian's done. It wasn't really overwritten that badly. And I think if anything, there's two things going on here. Number one, I think there was probably a thought of let's get back to sort of classic
adventure
comics, because Tom King may be a book that we really like overall. We'll talk about that at some point. But it didn't light up the sales charts. It was still, I think it was still DC's number one book, but it came way down in the sales from where it started. Mm-hmm. It's not a mainstream style.
No, and you know.
And so
obviously I'm attracted to that. So
if you're an editor at DC, you're like, we probably need to get back to basics with Batman. I can see that. And that's talking about the quality of it. That's just sort of looking at the business side of it. Now, the other thing is, it's impossible to get out of the back of your head the notion that DC is getting to get rid of all their heroes. And that's probably why Tom King was asked to move his story to a different book. And so this is always in the back of my head reading these comics, which is annoying because I don't like that I know that. I'm not reading any more blogs. That's my New Year's resolution. I don't want to know anything. So in the back of my mind, I'm always like, well, where is this leading? Because if they're just going to get rid of Bruce Wayne, then I'm not going to be interested in that. Unfortunately, put that aside. Just this issue, it was good. And I also don't like the Alfred thing, which we'll talk about again at some point, I'm sure. But in this issue, Bruce is haunted by the death of Alfred. he's remembering a conversation he used to have about Alfred saying, why don't you take all this money and, you know, really invest it in Gotham and build the Gotham you want to see. And so Wayne Enterprises is in the midst of a construction boom, and he's building a new Gotham, a Gotham that's, fixing the slums, doing the things he could be doing with his billions of dollars instead of making more Batmobiles, which of course he's also doing. So that was interesting. And then, so there's a whole point here where he's got a fundraise because he has a lot of money, but he can't do it all. And so there's a fundraiser scene that's kind of fun with the mayor, and Selina's there, and a bunch of tech douchebags. And then he's got this new vehicle, which is like kind of like this weird, I can't even figure out what the hell it is. It's like a weird hybrid exoskeleton / glider. And there's a bunch of, that the world's best hitmen are in Gotham. So you got like Cheshire and Merlin and Deathstroke, and he fights them. And, I mean, it was a very solid Batman story that I thought was well done. It wasn't overwritten. It was interesting. We'll see where it goes. Not a lot happened in here. There was a couple of scenes about Bruce Wayne, a couple of fight scene with Deathstroke, and one with Lucius Fox, and then it was over. It wasn't as bad, I think, as you might be expecting, Josh, but it's solid.
Yeah, but I don't really want that.
It's not going to blow your socks off.
Right, and so what's the point?
Well,
you know,
sometimes you just want to read a Batman
for me.
Story.
Yeah. For me,
yeah,
and that's cool. I think that's a perfect description of. There are other books that I would read that have that, and I'd be fine with it. But with Batman, like, if it's not really good, I don't find like I'm
that
kind
of. There's a backup that Tynion wrote that Guillaume March drew, that ties in sort of to the last backup with the Joker, and very very similar to the Dark Knight, in which the Joker has a small group of his henchmen killing off his other henchmen who know the details of his upcoming big plot, and then he kills off those guys. The same plot as the opening of The Dark Knight.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, it was fine. It was good. I mean, it was a solid book. I wouldn't say, like, wow, that was terrific, but I also wouldn't say, well, all my greatest fears were realized. So it's tough. It's tough.
Will you remember it in the future, though? No.
Yeah, but that's most comics, though. Most anything, really.
I know.
Who knows when we're actually going to get through it. And the other thing is, like, my biggest criticisms of Tom King's run, I don't love the pairing of Batman and Catwoman in this manner.
Uh-huh.
So now she's like seems to be his permanent sidekick, which I don't love. So that's neither here nor there, really.
Yeah, yeah. There's always a bit where they have to shake off the thing that was done before.
Well, I think they have to keep it because whatever's going on in the other book.
Yeah.
Which who knows when that'll ever come out. Let's talk about the Netflix Behind the Scenes podcast. Take a little break here. So often you watch a show and you wonder, how did the writers develop that plot? Or what inspired a character's signature outfit? It took how many people to make that monster? On Netflix Behind the Scenes podcast, you get an exclusive look at how its biggest series are made. Find out how a season of your favorite show comes together from script to screen. Season one of the podcast brought you to Hawkins, Indiana, and uncovered the magic of Stranger Things' third season. Now season two will venture to the continent, the world of The Witcher, with a three-part miniseries. In this new season of Behind the Scenes, takes you to the adaptation of Andrew Spakowski's best-selling books and into the world of Netflix original series The Witcher. So how did the writers, cast, and crew take almost 3,000 pages of original material and bring this fantastical world to life? The series will explore the characters of Geralt of Rivia, Yennefer of Yennerberg, Cerulea the Lion Cub of Sintra in detail. Featuring everyone from executive producers to the cast to sword masters, this is your ticket to a deeper understanding of The Witcher. Host Brandon Jenkins takes you through the adaptation process from the writer's room all the way to your screen.
I think that's really cool. I was thinking about this the other day as I was walking. I'm walking the dog a lot. That's when I think. And how almost 20 years ago, 15 years ago, DVDs and the extra features and the commentary were a thing. I will still sometimes buy some physical media, things I really love. Well, I'll grab on Blu-ray. I can't remember the last time I listened to a commentary, though. I think it's still on there. But I think that this as a way, of creating a podcast like this is a really interesting way to sort of provide that in the sort of new media landscape. I was like, I used to really like commentaries, but it's hard – so much. It's hard to fit it all in. I think this is a really cool way, you know, I mean, good on Netflix for sort of engaging people to get more engaged with the mini shows that they're doing. But two, it's a more modern way of sort of getting that information across.
Yeah, most people, I buy Blu-rays still, but most people don't. And so now how do you keep that content going, and how do you keep people engaged behind the scenes? And this is something people really enjoy learning about. And so this is a great way to do it.
Yeah, for sure.
So new episodes of Behind the Scenes are out now with new episodes weekly. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Pocket Casts, or wherever else you listen to podcasts. That's Netflix Behind the Scenes Podcast, Season 2, The Witcher.
Miles Morales, The End, number one. I have no idea what this came from or what it was. It felt like it was a one-shot. We go into the far future, Silent and Ahmed, who is a regular writer of the Miles Morales series, and Damian Scott, a name that I was like, oh, I know this name, and I believe he drew the Batgirl book that I love.
Yeah, way back in the early 2000s.
It had that same kind of energy and style, super fun to look at.
Well, Marvel's done a bunch of the end specials about the final story of the character.
It's great.
Is that what this was?
Yeah, so like you're in the future, some shit's gone down in the whole world, but Brooklyn has a dome over it, and so it really codifies that, you know, we are Brooklyn kind of thing, you know, like into a much more real thing where, you know, they have to be Brooklyn because they have to stick together because they're surviving in a harsher world, and, you know, people, you know, bad guys break in and they have to fight them off, and, you know, this whole time Miles Morales has sort of become the not like a Black Panther, like the leader and the spiritual leader of all the people. And he's just a great sort of leader, you know, head of everybody. And he makes sure that the kids have toys and you got to have fun sometimes, too. You know, really nice one shot here. There's, you know, story. I think I thought about making this pick of the week for sure. It's fun that Damian Scott art, man.
He was so good in that Batgirl book. I remember.
If you haven't read that Batgirl book, that's one of my favorite sort of extended Batman stories in the modern age, for sure.
It was during that great period where all of his side books were terrific.
Yeah, it's true. So that's worth checking out if you have not. Then over the break, I'm going to keep saying that, I guess, for at least another couple of weeks, and then I'll hopefully never have to say it again. Yeah, exactly. And I just counted. I'm not there yet. This week, also the small week, was a bit of a problem, but also what a gift. I read Butcher of Paris number two. Yeah. Now, I had grabbed Butcher of Paris number one at some point and thought, I think I will like this, and then forgot it.
This came out the week you missed when Jemski came on, the very last show of last year. The Butcher of Paris, number one, which was a true crime, it's a true story of a serial killer who was working in Paris during the occupation.
Yeah.
And I was like, I was reading it and we talked about the show. I was like, damn, Josh. It was a Patriot pick, but Josh, I was like, Josh, really, this is really missed out. This is kind of books he wants.
Uh-huh.
And so here we are.
Well, I had noticed it and I grabbed it and I was actually really happy that I looked and I was like, oh, good. I have number one right here. So I read number one and number two right in a row. I think I like the first issue a little bit better, but the second issue better. The second one gave you a little clarity. It doesn't matter. I liked it. I liked the way that it was done. I like that it. I know it's a true story, but it's done in the style. Like they found some characters for us to latch onto. I mean, if nothing else, I don't know how you do not find 1944, you know, October Paris is the most interesting goddamn thing ever, because what you don't ever see is the lives of the people who are actually still living in the place, who kind of have to go about their normal lives, but while they're under Nazi occupation, which I find fascinating.
Well, yeah, this issue opens up with three kids playing in the Seine.
Yeah.
And first of all, was it clean enough back then? Because it certainly isn't now. and they stumble upon a chest, which of course they're like, let's dig it up. It could have treasure. And I was like, it doesn't have treasure in it.
Every time you're a boy and you stumble upon a chest, there's a body in it. I know that much from real life and fiction.
But also, you know, before that, I was like, I had the same thought, because they're under Nazi occupation, but they're playing and they're just horsing around in the river. And I was like, I guess
it would have to happen.
I guess
you're not always under a boot heel with a gun pointed at you, at least, you know, literally.
Right.
That's really interesting.
The Dean Coates art is terrific, I think, for this book. Stephanie Phillips, we talked about last time. I think she's a new writer. I think the second issue was better than the first for me.
Yes.
Mostly because that little description on the title page. Mm-hmm. The first issue totally spoiled the whole issue, so that may be why I like the second issue better, because I didn't know what was coming.
Right.
But it's really interesting, and it's interesting in, as we talked about with Jim, that it's not like a whodunit, because we know whodunit from the very beginning. It's more like having to catch this guy, and while you're doing, and you're trying to do it while the Nazis are not necessarily getting in the way, because they also want to catch him, but they want to catch him for different reasons. So it's like there's two parallel investigations going. There's the French detectives, and then there's the Nazis, and there's a creepy mask, and they find a creepy room, and it was good.
You know, it's one of those H.H. Holmes things, you know, where, you know, he's masquerading as a good guy. And because of the very unique circumstances, he's able to get away with it.
It's part of the resistance.
Yeah, that's amazing. Really, really well written. I liked, I don't remember which one is it. I guess it was the end of the first issue. She had written, an essay about why. Yeah. And I was like, I'm all in. This is fantastic.
Oh, totally. And I was like, you know, as we talked about before, I was like, I had no idea this happened. This is totally
exactly
world. And
oh, the fact that it's true is great.
Yeah, I mean the overall story is true. The killer's true.
It's not right. Right.
No, but I mean it's the I assume the rest of the characters are fictionalized, but and you know, who doesn't love Nazis being assholes? I mean, obviously in fiction, not in real life.
We're treading a line here when we say things like that.
Anyway, I liked it. Over the break, I read issues 2 through 4 of RG 955 this week. Issue 4 came out. And it's basically the story of Archie as Elvis, and written by Brian Augustin and Mark Waid, who both wrote Flash in the 90s. And every issue has been a different artist. Derek Charm did this one. That's been one of my only complaints about the series. But as an allegory, it's been fun. It's a bit on the nose, but whatever. It's Archie. Veronica's father, Mr. Lodge, is his Captain Tom Parker, and Colonel Tom Parker. At this point in his career, by issue 4, he is locked into Hollywood, where he's making all these schlocky movies. He's in a 5-year contract to make 10 movies, and they're not good movies. He's not getting to work with anybody that he admires. It's all about turning out schlocky musicals that the kids love, and he's trapped in his gilded cage in Malibu, and just needs to find something real. It's totally silly, but I've really been enjoying it as a different. We discussed this before. They did an Archie in the 40s book where he went to war. This is already Archie in the 50s where he's a musical star. So it's fun to take a look at Archie through these different lenses and play with the world a bit. And it's fun.
Let's move along to the patron pick. The way that this works is if you are a supporting patron of iFanboy, which you can handle over at patreon.com/iFanboy, then every week you will get a chance to vote on a book that you will force us, will make us read and discuss.
Well, you know, it's adding it to the rundown. You can look at it as a.
I'm nice not. Thing. I don't mean that as a negative, but it is a non. It is compulsory. We are not.
That's true.
We are not given it. You must read this book. And I'd say, would you say more times than not, it turns out pretty okay?
I mean, I haven't run the numbers. I haven't done an analysis.
I know. I'm asking you to go off the gut. I feel like about half the time or more.
It's at least 50-50 where we enjoy the book versus book we didn't enjoy.
Right. The book this week was Marvel's X #1. This is an offshoot of Earth X, which is in itself a shootout of Marvel's.
I didn't know that till the very end. But yeah, I think this is the year of Marvel's. Is this the anniversary?
The 25th anniversary, I think.
They're doing a bunch of books that tie into Marvel's this year, so it must be this year the anniversary. Last year we had the return of Kurt Busiek and Alex Ross to come to do a one shot.
Oh yeah,
what happened during Comic Con? And this year, we're doing a bunch of these.
Mainstream comics likes nothing more but to celebrate or at least demarcate an anniversary of anything.
Sure.
In any way. You've got Alex Ross and Jim Kruger. Story by Alex Ross. Script by Jim Kruger. I think story by both of them.
How I think EarthX was.
Yes, that's exactly how EarthX was. That art on that story long ago was by Jean-Paul Leone. And this was by the color and art was by Wellbe, Well-BEE, which.
Cool. Sounds careful.
Yeah. And You always correct me on this, but I'm going to give a shot at it. We have sort of a semi-post-apocalyptic world where a disease of some sort seems to be infecting people all over, and they get scabbed all over and then come out with superpowers, but not in a good way, or they die. And this is sort of the last bastion of this boy in his home as they lock themselves up. His grandmother dies, and then both of his parents are gone, and his sister. And he's the last one, and he says, well, I'm going to go find the heroes. So he, you know, puts on a mask in his backpack, and he goes out to find the heroes. The world is full of crazy, superpowered people trying to kill everybody. It's not unlike a zombie apocalypse. He meets a truck driver with tattoos all over his arms and a hat that says, no fear. He said, all right, I'll take you. Well, you know, they're starting their hitchhiking road trip through the wasteland.
That's pretty the kid is he loves superheroes. The issue opens up with him playing like a Marvel like role playing game while his parents are watching the news, and so he's always wearing a Captain America shirt or an Iron Man shirt or something. And so ironically, he's the only one in family who's not infected. But so I was really confused because I didn't know this was an Earth-X offshoot until the very end when they said it. So I was trying to figure out, was this the Inhumans? Like, what are we doing here?
It did feel like the Inhumans gas thing that went around. It felt
because they were all in cocoons. I thought it was the Inhumans. Because again, I was like, is this in the Marvels world? Like, what part of history is this? So I was very confused by not knowing from the beginning that this was part of Earth-X. I didn't like Earth-X. I read it back then. I didn't like it. So I was like, okay, well, I don't really care about that. But the story itself, this kid who's trying to survive, who has to go out into the world to get food, and he has to wear a Green Goblin mask because he'd be a target if people think he didn't have powers. And so it was interesting. It was, like you said, it was kind of like The Walking Dead in the Marvel Universe without being about zombies. And I thought the art from Welby was good.
I feel like it definitely I think it was reminiscent of the John Paul Leone Earth X art.
Hell yeah,
And when I think back, by the way, I don't think I liked or disliked it so much. I don't remember it. All I remember at this point is that like it looked really good. So at this point, I see John Paul Leone on something, I'm like, all right, yeah. Yeah, that's right. You're absolutely right.
Jean Grey, that's all two things I remember about it.
But I feel like this art definitely filled that space. You know, it was like John Paul Leone mixed with like good Brent Anderson almost. Yeah,
it was a good looking book.
Yep.
And story wise, like I said, it was interesting for what it was. But again, I was like three quarters of the way through. I was like, what is going on here? Because again, Marvel's is all about celebrating the history of Marvel Comics. So I was trying to figure out how this fit in, and it was blowing my mind. And I was on a lot of cold medicine, so that might have affected it. But so it's tough because in the end, you know, I'm not going to read more of it.
Are you not?
No, I mean, I just don't care about the Earth-X stuff.
I dug it. I think as a thing, I didn't really know what to expect, and now I'm always looking for some. Like, I'm hoping that there's some interesting mystery to the truck driver. You know, I was like, is this Captain America? Is that what's going on here? That was sort of my first thought.
Right. You expect it to be somebody. It's like Johnny Blaze or, you know, who, like, what?
Yeah. I was pretty interested in it. This had an outside shot at Pick of the Week, I think, just because it
wasn't bad at all. It was interesting.
Yeah.
It's just investigating a world that I'm not necessarily into. So. Mm-hmm. Ratings, I guess, on Marvel's X, number one. Ratings out of 5 stars. I mean, it's a solid, like, 3.5.
I'm saying 3.75. All right. That's where I'm going to go.
And so you're going to stick with it?
Yeah, I'm going to read the next one. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. I'm probably not. I mean, if it comes out another week like this, maybe. But what are the odds?
If it's a man, I'll let you know. If not, I think that's totally fair.
That's fine. So, you know, patreon.com/ifanboy. That's where you can go to vote to add a book to the rundown. And now that we're back, I always enjoy watching the votes come in.
You do. He does. I mean, he's on it the whole week. He's like, here's where we are. He's keeping stats. He's going with it. I just like, just tell me when it's over. It's all I need to know. I don't want a horse race.
You up to date in case you need to read the book early.
No, I know. I appreciate it.
If there's like this book won pretty handily, and so you know, it's good to know early on so you can get the book out of the way.
That's always good. But I had read it anyway. This was one I grabbed it. I mean, it was a light week, but still. Patreon.com/iFanboy is where you can become eligible to make that vote. But also, it's a way to just say, I like this thing that you guys are doing, and I want to help support it because that's how this kind of works. It is pretty much the most important part of our fundraising efforts for sure, to keep this thing going for decade and a half, which is crazy. The next stretch goal, we've talked about this before. We made some progress towards it. We're going to, if we reach that level, we're going to add in a monthly non-comics media podcast, and we will be uploading all of the full-length video shows and minis to our YouTube channel and re-embed those on the website, so that the full back catalog will be available to the best of our ability. You can also find yourself over at ifanboy.threadless.com. That's our t-shirt store. There are currently 7 designs there. You can, not just t-shirts, you can get them put on all sorts of things that Threadless manufactures. You can have that great stuff put on. Nothing makes sense, nothing matters. It's probably a personal favorite. Although, after the Golden Globes, the GDAT shirt should be making a resurgence.
That is true.
My wife turns to me and she goes, do you consider Tom Hanks a goddamn American treasure? And I was like, Lindsay, he's the goddamn American treasure.
he's the one.
He's the urgy dad. He's GDAT Prime. You can go over to ifanboy.com/support. Or you can, if you want to issue all of that, you can just make a direct PayPal donation if that's a thing that you want to do. Throw a little something in the tip jar, or a lot, because we haven't brought this up in a while. But I need to be sure that people still know the random billionaire beneficiary, or not beneficiary, the opposite of that. Like, for example, Tom Steyer, who sends me email every single – or not email, mail, physical mail every single day announcing his candidacy for president. What if instead – he gave that money to me.
Right. To the show.
To keep this thing going.
We could do it in the end, better if we had the Steyer money.
It's. Let's look into that.
I mean, let's think about that, Tom Steyer. Otherwise, you're just letting it on fire.
I'm perfectly willing to be part of the George Soros conspiracy.
Absolutely.
If he's willing to bankroll it. That's the point.
Mayor Bloomberg. Let's talk
about it. And I think we're doing the public a good here too.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Two birds, one stone.
Where's the Ross Perot? There must be a trust somewhere.
Right.
We'll get into that too. That's the point, though.
Yeah.
That's what we're about.
I'm just saying, if you want to have a more productive use of your money, billionaires.
Yeah, if nothing else, we're going to show up on time. We're going to be entertaining.
You're going to get some return for your investment.
We're going to show up on time.
Monetary return. Look at some entertainment.
No,
returned.
No, definitely not monetary. We've proven that time and time again.
You'll get some entertainment return, though. And really, what's this life is hard and short. Let's have fun while we're here.
Then you can get to ifanboy.com/Amazon, where you'll find links to the books that we talk about, the pick of the weeks and the book explodes, and a general link for Amazon purchasing that you would do that can help out the show very indirectly and easily on your part. For example, you need parts to fix your vacuum, which is what I got this week. The great internet retailer. And we'll see if I can take a vacuum apart and put it back together to be more functional than it had been before.
This is turning into a very ironic conversation.
Yep. That's what we do. That's the kind of thing you're going to get with the Steyer Endowment.
That's right.
More of that.
The Tom R. Steyer Foundation.
And finally, if you do become a patron, if you give it the $5 or higher level a month, we add you to the list, to the queue, to receive your very own patron superpower that we sometimes make up ahead of time, we sometimes make up on the spot. But now is the point of the show where we do that, and God forbid we run out of these. I know that you'd be upset,
right,
dear listener.
So the irony of what you just said about the vacuum is that Eric Smith's power –
uh-huh –
is that he can take apart anything and know immediately how it works.
Wow.
Yeah, it's not like Forge. You can't build anything.
Uh-huh.
But if you took apart your vacuum, he would immediately know, okay, this is how this works. And this goes, oh, here's the problem. This part's broken. He knows anything mechanical he could take apart and knows intimately how it works and how to fix it.
So he's just a very, very good mechanical engineer.
But he's had no formal training.
I see. But he could put it back together. Like it's not just a theoretical sort of not. Like, I know how that works. But I'm fumble fingers with a screwdriver. Yeah. I don't know a Phillips from a flathead, man.
I mean, that's part of the learning curve, Eric. He knows how it should be done. He just, can he do it?
Okay. That's how I work, actually. That's a great number of things in my house are functioning on that principle or not functioning, as the case may be. Like, for example, I installed a car stereo in my wife's car, which was her birthday present. Her birthday was well over a month ago. Just got it working, except the steering wheel controls, which I still can't figure out how to make work, even though everything seems right.
I thought you were going to say you installed the stereo and now the steering wheel doesn't work.
That would be more problematic than where we're at. It's just slightly
less. More interesting. Like, how did I do that?
I mean, listen, I've been
I'm
there.
I'm impressed.
Yeah. There's unforeseen consequences. That'll happen. Jonathan Shearer is not immune to illness. However, when an illness is coming on, he is able to distribute the symptoms in the way that he would most like.
Okay, so
like imagine like a video game that you know where you put like all the power into strength or intelligence ability. So if he's got a cold, he can put all of the symptoms into a stuffy nose and take them all away from sore throat or take away points from nausea and give it to the fever. He's still got to have the sickness, but he can control the symptoms of that and the value of those symptoms in a given illness.
I was trying very consciously to not do any sick-related powers, but that's a good one.
Thank you. Well, the other – I was thinking that I've had this terrible cold. It's just short of debilitating me. It will not go away. But, you know, I don't have the stuffy nose. I've had some sneezing, but it didn't have like the horrible coughing, which I hate. So I thought, oh, that's – anyway, I don't like to explain it, but I did it. That's why – that's part of this illness. I am definitely stupid right now.
Jared Loyster, he knows where all the wood comes from.
Any given piece of wood.
Right. So like, do you have any wood furniture near you?
I mean, I assume that underneath this couch is, I mean, the house is generally made of wood also.
So he could come into your house and he could run a hand lovingly along one of your beams and say, oh, this is a solid piece of oak.
Massive. It's a Massachusetts timber.
Came from the valleys of North New Hampshire. He could point out exactly where the forest it came from, where it came from.
Type of tree.
Yeah, he knows like the origins. It's almost like chew. Like, you know, the food with chew. Like he knows, but he's that with wood.
Boy, there's a lot of IKEA left over in here. And I feel like that would probably be pretty scary.
He wouldn't. Yeah, that would be bad. But yeah.
Can he do it chipboard, particle board, MDF?
He has a seizure.
That's tough in this world, too, because there's a lot of that around.
He needs to only be around natural woods.
Okay. Yeah. Full grain, full, real hard.
Yeah, original wood.
Uh-huh. That's nice. That's good. Do you remember long ago there was a sketch? Nicolas Cage was hosting Saturday Night Live, and in that sketch he became Tiny Elvis. Well, Jay Sternitzky has a little cup that he carries around with him. In it is Tiny Elvis.
In a cup?
Yeah. And he has to be careful because if he takes Tiny Elvis out of the cup, he just can't stop remarking how huge everything is.
So Tiny Elvis lives in the cup only knowing the cup.
Yeah, he's in the cup. I mean, he can be let out. Imagine like, you know, you have a pet bug or whatever and you have a cup. It's got little holes and Jay carries them around. You know, theoretically, you would think that there would be some benefits to having a Tiny Elvis in a cup with you. You know, even if it's just... hey, sing me a little something, Tiny Elvis, you know, and so just down in the cup, he has Tiny Elvis in a cup.
But he can't see above the cup to see all the huge things?
Not when he has the lid on.
Oh, it's got a lid.
Yeah, he's got a cup that he carries Tiny Elvis around. He can take the lid off. You could let Tiny Elvis isn't unhappy about this.
Sure.
Oh, man, put me back in the cup, man. Let's go. Thank you. Thank you very much.
That's fun for everyone. So,
how you doing down there, Tiny? How you doing down there, Tiny? No, man.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can go. If you give it the $5 higher level, you get your own superpower, just like Eric, Jonathan, Jared, and Jay.
Let's go to listener mail. We're at the edge here. Yeah, so let's leave the first question for a time that we have more time to do it, because I think it's a good conversation. I don't want to give it short shrift. And we're going to do our best with this question from Ken. All right. Ken says, I need a good – this is the hard part – pre-1960s non-superhero collected edition or graphic novel to purchase for my cousin. What are some of your favorites? Favorite is spelled with a U,
right,
which tells me that he's not from America.
Favorites.
Probably England, possibly Canada, could be Australia, and other places that have been colonized.
So pre-50s, so far pre-60s, we're talking about.
Pre-60s.
40s and 50s, golden age, the golden age comics. Non-superhero collected editions or graphic novels. That's tough because there's not a lot collected from that era.
It's true. And I don't know that I have specific stuff for you, but I do have some very specific ideas that I think that I would go for were I you. First off is The Spirit. Will Eisner's.
That's superhero.
Is it? I feel that that's more.
He wears a costume. He's a pulp hero.
Yes, but at the very least, he's a pulp hero. It's not superpowered in nature. It is just beautifully graphically designed. I mean, really, that's what I tend to think of, is that this is creating the language of visual storytelling and art. And I just think of those beautiful. Title pages and the way that all that's drawn, and there's no way around the fact that that is really beautiful stuff. And it's not like Superman, Batman, silly stuff. And
it's on the edge.
It's not done for kids. I understand that. That's the first thing I go for. Second thing that I would go for would be to look into sort of old EC Comics war comics.
Yeah.
Really just beautiful. The stuff I want to say, William Gaines published that stuff. Russ Heath. Kind of stuff like that. And at the same time, the same kind of EC horror comics. I feel like that is the stuff from the 50s especially that is really going to stand out. It'll be something for you that's appreciable today. Honestly, the Golden Age superhero stuff that I've read, a little tough. So in that fact, the fact that there's no superhero stuff, that's what I would definitely go for. If you can, find a little Wallywood sci-fi kind of stuff, Al Williamson sort of art. There's a lot of really good stuff. But, as far as the books, but those are the names that I would go with and start going in that way. I have a collection of Wits End comics, which is a whole Wallywood thing, which I don't know if it's all pre-60s, but there's definitely stuff in there.
I mean, if you like horror, that there's been a lot of – that's obviously not surprisingly been with the focus of the reprints of that era. So like Dark Horse did a whole line of EC archives.
Oh yeah, there you go.
And Fantagraphics did a whole EC artist library reprints. These were about 6 or 7 years ago. So the EC horror books have been pretty well reprinted. The Wallywood artist edition is terrific, but it's gigantic and expensive, but it's a good look into that era. It's tough because not a lot of reprints of that stuff. It was a different kind of comic for the market now, so there's not been a whole.
What was I can actually see it from here, but I'm tethered up. What was the comics? They were drawn during the war. It's like a two book volume, and it's the two soldiers' names satire comics.
Right, that was not comics. That was done in the. Those were comic strips done for the in the war, I have the same volume. I know them very intimately. I just can't think of the name right now.
I mean, it's not comic books in the sense.
No, they're one issue, one image.
Yeah, they're one strip.
Willie and Joe.
Willie and Joe, that's the one. But I'm willing to count that because I think that.
Those are amazing. I had a collection as a kid. It was Bill Malden. I had a collection.
Bill Malden. There you go.
I had a soft cover collection that I read over and over and over and over and over as a kid, and then. Maybe 6 or 7 years ago, they put out a beautiful collection of hardcover collection of it. Mm-hmm. But that's a different kind of comic, but it's still in terms of artistry, incredible.
Yeah.
They were published in the, Stars and Stripes and things like that for the soldiers. They were syndicated to papers as well.
For my money, those 50s war comics specifically, as you're talking about guys who are working through their World War II and Korean War stuff.
Really, 11 years ago that collection came out. Jesus.
Yeah, no, it's all that stuff's a long time ago. Those would be where I would start, for sure.
It's hard for Golden Age stuff. It's just not. I mean, that's not superhero. Like, obviously, you can buy a ton of Batman and Superman Golden Age collections, and there's always Captain America. But if you're looking for non superhero Golden Age stuff, there's not been a huge market for those reprints.
Yeah, you know, that stuff was all considered to be, it was kid stuff. So there's a lot of Western stuff and things like that, but I don't know much about
romance comics and.
But they were aimed at kids, so there's maybe not that much stuff that sort of holds up really well in the same way. But you never know; you could come across a rich vein of art. But those are the places I would start.
Yeah, I think you're looking at those mostly for the art.
Yep. Oh yeah. Sure. Totally.
contact@ifanboy.com. That's where you can write in and send us an email, and you can even send us an email that's not about Watchmen or Doomsday Clock. If you want.
Could.
No one else this week did, other than Ken, but. Also, as we talked about at the end of last year, we archived everything that we didn't answer. It goes right into a folder because there's too many of them. So we start the year clean. So if we didn't get to your email last year, you can always resend it.
For sure. So speaking of the new year, I owe everyone listening here, I owe a Talksplode 2 from December. As in years past, it was unable to put one together during that month. So there's
swap months so that you don't have Talksplode in December.
That's a good point. We could do that. So I've got one on the way for you this month. I don't have it locked down yet. And then I'll have another one for you next month for sure. And then also we will have a Booksplode this month. And maybe we should slide.
Josh is going to have interview me for Talksplode. Also a hangout, a Patreon hangout, patreon.com. One of the perks is a monthly hangout. We haven't scheduled anything this month just because both Josh and I have been sick. I don't know what the Booksplode is going to be. We haven't done the hangout. This is all stuff we got to figure out. It's
the beginning of the year really comes on hard, and then if the two people doing it are both down, that's a problem.
And we're already basically halfway through the month, so we're going to figure this out soon.
Yes,
don't you?
But we will. We always do. Yeah. Connor is the master of the schedule
this month,
and I usually show up when I'm told.
Books blow is Watchmen.
You know,
something we don't have to read.
Something we no. I would definitely have to read it. Yeah, oh, right. I forgot about all this.
Yeah. We'll figure it out.
Head over to ifanboy.com. You can find all of our podcasts, everything that we've done before, all the past Talksplodes, Booksplodes, et cetera, and our Pick of the Week shows. You can find out what the Pick of the Week is before the show comes out, so you are prepared when you are listening by liking facebook.com/ifanboy, following @ifanboy on Twitter, or follow ifanboy comics on Instagram. And you can find the Best of the Week in panels that Connor had a hell of a time with this week.
Oh, yeah. Do you know it's been 7 years since we stopped doing the website? Like daily content on the website?
Doesn't feel like it.
7 years.
Gets in your bones.
It's been longer than we did the website without the podcast.
You can follow C.S. Kilpatrick on Instagram or J.A. Flanagan on Twitter and Instagram.
You're back.
Also for that. Off and on. Depends on when it annoys me. I'm annoyed with – I could go any – I'm hovering over the. I'm a man who works from home, so I need an outlet. But if it wasn't for that, self-destruct. Pictures of my dog on Instagram. Call it a day.
If you like the show, please consider leaving a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your shows. Overcast, whichever aggregator you use, it's a great way to help the show. Is to leave a review or just a star rating, helps people find podcasts. We do thank you for that. Even better than that, is tell your friends. Word of mouth is a great way to. Spread the word about iFanboy, and we appreciate that every time someone does and lets us know about it. We thank you for that. And I can't guarantee I'm going to be healthy next week. I may never be healthy again, so that'll be the fun mystery. That'll be the fun thing. Tune in next week to find out if I'm dying or not, and I'll obviously still be doing the show.
I hope this doesn't sound insincere, like I'm just trying to get attention, but I hope you don't die.
Well, you have a harder time doing the show.
And not just for those kind of reasons. I would be upset if you were to die, especially if it was from something as innocuous as a cold. But if you were going to catch a cold that was going to kill you, you would definitely do so in the greater metropolitan Manhattan area. So that makes sense.
There's nothing for you in my will, Josh. So
you don't have anything.
I have nothing to give.
I'm not offended by that.
Until that stare money comes in. All right, until next week, I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. It's the stayer money.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.